For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening. I'm Douglas Floyd. I am the temple director and president of the board at Ancient Dragon. Taigen is away, so he asked me to speak tonight. I thought maybe instead of a Dharma talk, we'd have a Dharma ramble. And give you a chance to talk. So I passed out case 7 from the koan collection Mumonkan, Jiaozhou Washu Bowl. This is sort of a, when I give Dharma talks, I tend to alternate between talking about koans or just talking about Zazen practice. And this is sort of a change because I picked a koan, but I've picked sort of one of the uncontroversial koans. I tend to get the violent ones where people hit each other, they cut cats in two, or they chop off people's fingers, that sort of thing. But this is a fairly straightforward one about the great teacher, Jiaozhou. So the case is that a monk said to Jiaozhou, "I have just entered this monastery, please teach me." Jiaozhou said, "Have you eaten your ice roll?" The monk said, "Yes, I have." Jiaozhou said, "Wash your bowl." The monk understood. And Wuman's comment was, Jiaozhou opened his mouth and showed his gallbladder, his heart, and his liver. I wonder if the monk really heard the truth. I hope he did not mistake the bell for a jar. I'm going to skip Wuman's verse because it is translated in radically different ways from translation to translation. I don't think I know what it should say based on the review of different translations. But so this seems like a fairly straightforward koan, not one of those real dramatic ones, as I said, where something gets cut off or somebody gets hit, and someone has a great blinding flash of enlightenment. And I think that's a good thing. In the commentaries, most of the translations of Mumonkan that we have in English are written by teachers in koan traditions. And so they come at this as a story about having great enlightenment experience, Satori or Kinsho, and matters related to that. So there doesn't seem to be anything about that on the face of this. So what they do is they undertake a metaphorical reading in which whether or not when the monk says, "I've eaten my breakfast," that's supposed to mean I've had Satori, I'm enlightened, I've had a great enlightenment experience. And when Jiaozhou says, "Wash your bowl," that's metaphorically saying quite a list of potential things. One is, oh, well, you've had Satori, you probably have a big head, you have Zen sickness, and you're running around thinking about everything is all one all the time. So washing your bowl is continuing practice so you get rid of this obsession with oneness and emptiness. Or alternatively, the reading is that eating your breakfast means you've had this Satori experience, but washing your bowl means you need to wash your bowl means you need to continue to practice so you'll have further Satori, or eating your breakfast means you've had Satori and washing your bowl means after you've pretty much made it, you're enlightened now. There's still some minor imperfections and flaws in your character, and so you need to keep practicing in order to just wash those away. And you know, what's interesting is that Zen experience is pretty simple and uncomplicated. I mean, it can seem sort of arcane to people who haven't been doing it, but it is pretty straightforward at the end of the day. So these readings seem very strange to me, and some of the explanations are very odd. So Thomas Cleary, who is a great translator of Buddhist and Zen texts, and who's translated Mumonkan, says that have you eaten your breakfast refers to the direct experience of immediate reality without conceptual adornment, the initiatory experience of Zen. And clean your bowls means transcending the subjective register of initial realization so as to clean the vessel for further enlightenment. But I have to say, I kind of think in sort of women's terms that they tend to be mistaking the bell for a jar. So the bell, the ringing of the Dharma, the message of the Dharma, they're understanding it as something different. And I think a much more straightforward reading of this and in treating it as a reminder comes from sort of the emphasis of our Soto tradition, that all of our activities are opportunities for us to wake up and express our Buddha nature, that all of our activity can be practice realization, so that enlightenment is not an experience, an essentially intellectual experience, but is a way of dropping off our confusion of attachment and aversion, and particularly the delusion of our carving up the world into segments, especially carving up the world between me and everything else out there, and how does it relate to me? And so our practice is not so much trying to reach some experience, but to have this authentic engagement with our life, moment to moment, activity to activity. And that's true for all of our practice, on and off the cushion, even on the cushion. You know, Zazen is not something that is fundamentally different from the rest of our life. It's sitting on your cushion, sitting up straight, don't move, breathe. That is Zazen. And in doing that, we wake up. And we wake up over and over again. We fall away, we come back. We fall away, we come back. But as we do that, we wake up, we check it, we straighten up, because we've almost always slumped, and we carry on taking our breaths, just sitting and breathing. And that experience carries over through all of our life. So we are in every activity. We can get caught up in whatever feelings, emotions we have, sort of distancing ourselves from the world, sort of being in a twilight awareness of what we're doing. But we wake up and we acknowledge that and move forward. That dropping away of the thoughts and emotions and concepts that sort of cloud our awareness of this moment, that dropping away is what Master Dogen, the founder, the Japanese founder of Soto Zen, calls dropping off mind and body. But he also frequently refers to it as freeing yourself from snares and nets, or freeing yourself from snares and cages all the time. Just that experience of on your cushion or in other more active pursuits, waking up from that twilight awareness to here I am, this is what I'm doing, is itself freedom. It allows us to engage with the world in a more authentic. I mean, it's for lack of a better word. And I think that is what Judge was talking about. You've eaten your breakfast, good, you ate your breakfast. Now it's go on to your next experience. Wash your bowls, stay awake, wash your bowls. That's the expression of your awakening when you do that. So nobody has really said what this story is about is the monk comes to Jiajou and says, okay, give me your great teaching. And Jiajou says, well, follow the rules. You're supposed to wash your bowl now. But that wouldn't really be such a bad reading, especially in all Zen monasteries, but especially in Soto monasteries. A great deal is made of the practice is following the schedule, doing one thing after another, and that is your practice, and that is the expression of your awakening. Paying attention, acting wholeheartedly. By acting wholeheartedly, I don't mean you're trying really hard. I mean that you don't have that divided sense where you're washing the dishes, but you're really thinking about what's on TV next, or you're frustrated because I'm washing the dishes here, but my sister always finds a way to go to the bathroom at this time of night. That's right. We drop that off. And it's not something, you know, awakening is not something, is not a technique, and it's not a how do we do it? We just do it. It's something that we do naturally. There are ways to cultivate it and to encourage it and make it easier to recognize. And that's what Zazen is, largely, is sitting still, simplifying things. And on the one hand, your mind can go crazy because it's not occupied. On the other hand, when you wake up, it's very hard to ignore. I mean, the contrast is dramatic. And while you may not be able to cause yourself to be awake or to stay awake, I think you can cultivate it with a simple willingness to be here and stay awake. I've waked up. Okay, I'm going to breathe now and feel what that's like. I'm going to breathe now, feel what it's like to sit up straight. I hear the sounds around me. I smell the incense. I hear the doshi walking around the altar, whatever. While following the schedule doesn't work outside of monasteries, we certainly have our own routines, we have our own challenges, we have our own day. There's no reason why the same sort of practice isn't available to us. You know, get up in the morning, sit zazen, eat breakfast, shower, go to work, whatever. The point is, wake up, engage in the activity in this wholehearted, single-minded, undistracted way, being willing to be awake in the activity. And I think that's about all it takes. As I said, it's waking up and acting with the conviction of your awakening, if you like. So it's not a matter of great effort or great will to wake up. It's a matter of willingness to stay awake and to experience this, whatever it is, in this moment. And by that I don't mean just, you know, the heat of the room or how your legs feel when you're sitting, but also how you feel. You know, and it's a matter of waking up to and staying with whatever there is, not trying to fix it, but wake up and then act. Not to have special feelings, not to have a great realization, not to have a profound experience of emptiness, but to engage fully with this moment, which itself is Buddha. And we are Buddha being Buddha when we do that. So I think I think the commentary, Hunan's comment, is pretty clear. That Jiajou opened his mouth and showed his gallbladder, his heart, and his liver. I wonder if the monk really heard the truth. I hope he did not mistake the bell for a jar. So, you know, there are a lot of translations of that last one. It seems sort of unimaginative. I would think that if you would maybe know, because I'm better just looking at the text sometime, just thinking of bells in monasteries, I would think the translation would be more like mistaking a bell for a bowl or something along those lines, in a jar or a vase or a pitcher. That's another translation people have. I don't know where they're coming up with those, but the obvious similarity is the bell and a bowl. But, you know, this showing his gallbladder, his heart, and his liver, I think is, you know, the most profound and necessary part of Zen practice and Zen awakening is just washing your bowls. The interesting thing is that his innards are on display, which I think is particularly appropriate for a Zen saying, because I think it's fair to say that it is more productive to think of Zen as surface. We meet what's here. We're not trying to penetrate something and have some deep realization of something dark and hidden. We're trying to engage with whatever it is that presents itself to us, with all of our experience, whatever it is. And so I think that's a particularly appropriate metaphor of showing his gallbladder, heart, and his liver. So I think that's about enough talking for me. I'd be very interested. There are a number of people here I've never met before, which suggests that at least some of you may be fairly new to Zen. I'd be interested in any questions you might have or any thoughts you might have about the koan or just your practice generally. Or experienced people.
Do you think he meant by wash the bowl, because you said there's numerous thoughts that could be thought about that, that is, because monks have to be very clean. There's a lot of discipline, like cleaning the temple and washing the body, that has to be very rigid.
Well, I think the appropriate part is that, just as a matter of the story, it would be the rule. You eat your breakfast, you clean your bowl. Nobody's going to do it for you. I think that washing your bowl, and I'm not sure, maybe I didn't follow your question. Washing your bowl is very open to a metaphorical interpretation, because in lots of koans and Zen writing generally, cleaning and polishing refer to zazen and practice generally, sort of scrubbing away your defilements in order to wake up. So I think that's one basis for that reading. But I don't think there's anything in the language of the koan that suggests this, oh, this is all about how eating your breakfast is having a profound experience of enlightenment, and cleaning your bowls, it's just minor polishing that's involved after that in your practice. I think it's much more straightforward and less metaphorical than that. I mean, there's always, in a lot of koans, you have this interplay between what's concrete and literal, but there are metaphorical or poetic imagery, at least in it at the same time, which throws light on the more literal story of the saying that's involved. And I don't know that I see it here so much. Yeah.
I like your concrete interpretation rather than metaphorical one. The way I heard this, it seems as though, in my very limited experience, that some of these conversations that happen between the teacher and the student involve an initial question and answer, and then the teacher says something or asks something that sort of all of a sudden pulls the rug out or changes things. And the way I heard that in this particular dialogue is almost like Zhao Zhao is asking, did you really eat when you ate your rice? He says, well, sure, yeah, I have breakfast. you know, yeah, sure, of course, everybody had practice. But then his next thing is wash your bowl. It's I imagine the monk going away and realizing he didn't really eat when he was eating. And perhaps he should wake up and wash his bowl when he washes his bowl.
Yeah, I like that too. And the whole idea that the monk comes and says, please teach me.
Yeah.
You know, sets it up as, well, what's he expecting? He's expecting some statement about complex Tiantai theory or something about emptiness, something really profound and intellectual. And yet he said, well, did you eat your breakfast?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. Well, so he gave him one shot, right, to say, you know, to respond also concretely and to show right now, this activity right now, to express his understanding concretely. And he doesn't get it, so Jiajia takes another run at him and says, well, then wash your bowls, and then the monk understands. Yeah, I think that that's right. I think it is. Okay, were you kind of dozing through breakfast, or were you starving and gobbling your breakfast, or were you there?
I've got a few questions. You know, one would be, I'm wondering if there is possible to consider that there is kind of you were saying that you prefer the sort of straightforward approach to a metaphorical approach. And I sort of wonder if they might be sort of combined here in a way. You know, Kaigen often asks us to sort of really imagine the situation of people, you know, in these exchanges, what's actually going on. And if a monk approaches and is asked, have you eaten your rice gruel, and, you know, has this, you know, what do we say hypothetically, the monk takes that as, you know, the metaphorical question, have you had waking? Mm-hmm. And he says, yes. And then the register could kind of switch, because Gaucho says, well, then wash your bowl. You know, and I, which is this very straightforward, you know, take care of whether it's your monastic schedule or your daily life, like take care of the next thing in your life, you know, bring that awakening into everyday activity, or don't see it as separate to begin with. Because when you think about it, it, you know, in a monastic sort of situation, it's pretty absurd that a monk would come before a teacher having eaten his breakfast and not having washed his bowl.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of an unthinkable situation, right? So it seems like, you know, Jiajia kind of challenging him, you know, seriously, you know, you think you're awake now? And then that sort of echoed in Lumong's question, which was really, you know, so that's sort of one question. I just wondered if you have any response to that.
You know, I think the stories are deliberately ambiguous and mm-hmm. lend themselves to multiple readings, and unless something is clearly wrong in its face, it's just absurd that I'm willing to go with it as a possible reading. I like the emphasis on, okay, back to this activity, whether or not it's in response to somebody coming up and saying, you know, I'm here, I'm a very enlightened person, let's see what you got.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, come back to earth. This is where practices, this is where Buddha is. You have to express your now. You've had an awakening, now you have to express it. I don't say no. I just I think it's interesting that that's where every Rinzai or Sambhogyudan teacher seems to come from when they read this koan, and don't seem to quite say, okay, moment to moment is your practice, is your awakening.
I guess what I was trying to sort of think about is, is it would be quite possible for a person to think they've had some awakening, but if they haven't washed their bowl yet, they would probably be confused about that.
Well, I think the question I have too is, I'm just not sure how monastic life worked in the time of fasting.
Yeah.
I mean, as you say, how likely is it that after breakfast he hasn't washed his bowl? At least the way we do Oriyoki, you would never get off your cushion before you washed your bowl. But also, this is a monastery with 300 to 500 monks.
Yeah.
And the abbot has special quarters where he spends most of his time because he's not really as much a spiritual leader as an administrative director of this massive institution. He's just kind of hanging around, and this monk rushes up to him. And this is China, This guy is a visiting monk, and he's going to grab one of the most famous Zen teachers in China in while the guy's just trying to walk off his breakfast or something. It just seems kind of...
Yeah.
If you read the koans with just a little distance sometimes, you start going, you think this is a historical document? I doubt it, but anyway.
Anyway, just thought. The other question, and I'm sorry if I've taken too much time, but... I still don't know what to make. Well, I don't know what to make of any of it, but especially the line, "I hope he did not mistake a bell for a jar." I thought we had to say about maybe mistaking a bell for a bowl. I mean, that is really plausible. But what would that look like? What would that be for the monk to be mistaking a bell for a jar?
I think that it would be he understands this to be, you're just telling me what the monastery rules are. I'm supposed to wash my bowl because I've had breakfast, and not understand that there really is a Dharma teacher. Now, just as a literary thing, Woman's already told us that the monk understood, so now to come back and say, "Well, I hope you didn't get it wrong," seems a little strange because he's already just told us that he understood. But I think that's the thrust of what that is.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Douglas. I have a weird impression on the comment about the bell and the jar thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, one way to think of it is like a jar or a bowl is something you use to contain something. And the bell is like an opening to the meditation practice or the zazen. And I feel that the monk is being represented in a way where he wants to contain something. He wants to be taught something. He wants enlightenment. He wants something to be pinned down and named and given to him. And I feel that the bell in the jar is sort of, I hope he doesn't mistake, the zazen practice is a place to contain enlightenment or a place to achieve something.
Mm-hmm.
And in a similar way, like washing the bowl is meant to be done without sort of achieving a clean bowl. It's just meant to be done because there's something to do. So I feel that there's some nuances in here about entering into an experience and wanting to achieve something or having a gaining idea or something like that,
mm-hmm.
within that experience, whether it's zazen or it's even washing the bowl. So I feel that there's some way in which this monk is being represented as wanting to attain, wanting to sort of put boundaries around things and sort of pin it down. Well, the bell and the jar is a perfect kind of, the meditation bell is an opening up.
Yeah.
And the jar is the exact opposite. It's something you use to contain something.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but I really like that a lot.
Yeah.
And the bell spreads sound, opens up, and the bowl or the jar would contain
something. The jar would contain something.
That's an interesting observation. Yeah.
I really like this koan because I think it really kind of gets to the heart of practice, and I think it's probably really perfect for a beginner as well because it kind of kind of like pinpoints what practice is and kind of what it is not. And I think some people might get frustrated with practice if they have expectations of maybe, you know, I'm supposed to have this mystical experience. I'm supposed to, you know, why am I not finding this? You know, why am I not getting this enlightenment? And I think, you know, he talks about, without even thinking about like any sort of references to or metaphors, I think it really is kind of straightforward in a way. It's just like you just do this, and you just do it to do it, and you know, you try not to think of anything that's you're expecting or you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, you know, in what I was thinking of with the bell in the jar, in a way, like, you know, there's a lot of lofty customs and rituals in Zen and Buddhism, and a bell would kind of point towards that. You know, this is something, you know, oh, this is our big ritual, you know. But and the jar or the bowl is just something that you do, and so this is something that you do on a regular basis. And it's not, you know, you take it off of the cushion, and this is you know a lot of times, you know, I think we think about, or especially as beginners, you know, this is my big moment, I'm here, I have been working on this, you know, and then you get up and you make coffee, and already you're thinking of some other stuff, you know, you're already lost. And that actually happens to me every morning.
Well, I think that's right, and I think. There's a good message in this koan, just thinking back on my own experience and maybe everybody's experiences, that people have the idea that they're going to come practice meditation and that's going to give them some profound insight sitting on a cushion or some calmness or something that then they carry with them across the day. And once you've gotten calm that morning, then you're going to just kind of be calm all day. You're going to be all very zen and all. And what happens off the cushion doesn't have anything to do with your practice. Your practice is what sort of got you anesthetized so you can make it through your day.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is saying, no, that's not it. And I think that's a good message to learn. And I hope is encouraging to people that this awakening happens across the day. It happens over and over and over again. But our practice is not so much causing something to happen as recognizing what's already happened and saying, okay, I'm prepared to be with that and to act from that. But anyway. Anyone else? David.
Just a couple of thoughts real quick. And one serious question is important to me because it affects people in the Sangha. I have a tendency to look at koans just straightforward and not trying to find a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a koan that Taikin gave me. He said, the student asked him, what is the way? And he said, ordinary thinking. You know, and he said, how do I find it? You know, how do I get it? And he says, well, the harder you try, the farther the way it gets. And so I'm taking that and applying it to this one. And I'm saying, oh, here's a monk coming in, asking what it is and trying to attain it. He's pushing himself out of the way. And what Xiao Zhou is saying is just come back, do the next thing, wash the bowl. And I'm also reminded of a story where it was somebody visiting a renowned teacher, and he wanted to know about Zen. So the then teacher poured his cup,
mm-hmm.
and kept on pouring and pouring until it was overflowing. And that's when, you know, he said, stop, it's overflowing. He said, well, unless you went to your cup, I can't give you the knowledge you're looking for.
Yeah.
And that kind of, so maybe there is maybe a more metaphorical mm-hmm. thing here. You know, I just see it as just go on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. And maybe there is a metaphor here. You have to empty, like you said before in your talk, you have to empty it. In order to get more meaning, otherwise you stay in a flat place. You don't grow. You don't go beyond Buddha. You stay in the place you're at all the time. But you said something in your talk, and it hit me very, very hard. and painful. There is a member of the Sangha whose mother is very ill. And if the purpose of our practice is to be with everything, just be with it. How do you be with losing somebody who's dear to you? How do you, in your stillness and your understanding, how does one cope with something like that? That you're seeing someone you deeply care about waste away. It's not like there was an accident, they're gone. It's almost easy to take, in a way. But to see someone slowly die. How in our practice can we, or how can we use our practice to come to terms with something like that situation, and just by being there and being with them?
I think just being there with that sadness and pain, even horror, is what all we can do to cope. I don't think that there's nothing that we're going to understand that makes it okay. There's going to be the pain, but we live with that pain and sadness.
For me, the individual, he was my Dharma buddy during the practice session. And I just wanted to give something to him. And that's my desire.
Sure.
And my trying to give. And what can I give him?
At a less profound level, Cruz, for whom we had the memorial dedication, was my dog for 13 years. And, I continue to be very sad after a couple of weeks. But, there are ways of being sad, and we can be awake in our sadness, or we can sort of be overwhelmed by our sadness. And being awake in the sadness does not make it less sad. I think one kind of sadness is being within the snare or the cage, and the other kind of sadness, being awake with it, is not. But I think that we have no choice but to suffer.
Just not run away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can't run away from it anyway. Right? Yeah. So I think that attempting to run away or suppress it does not work and may indeed make it worse. So it's not necessarily a message of hope. So, I'm sorry to hear about that.